that you're fucking mean. Like, this is actually not about hating men. This is about the meanness that you observed and adopted from your mom. And it's at a deep level. You don't realize that you're doing it. You don't want to fucking do it. So the old chapter is, I'm a mean man killer. And just mean, period. I'm an angry, mean person. No, you're not. You're a freaking incredible yogi. You're full of joy and love. You freaking document it and create it for a living. That's not who you are. So if in the next chapter, you are just the yoga instructor, your love and your joy, and you start to go to war against all those places where you're fucking mean, you're cold, you go to bed before he does, you buy him the MacBook and resent it instead of being so thrilled that you have the money to do something incredible for him, that you, you know, are more affectionate, that you're just all these things that don't feel natural because my nature is to be a little bit colder. My nature is to be judgy. My nature, because that's what I saw. What are the ways in which you're a mean bitch to him?
I mean, you just named it, going to bed before him, questioning his adulthood, sort of like, we have three dogs, so it's like, you know, I'm always like, did you walk them? Did you, you know, like, just not patronizing them, but being condescending in that way. I mean, just, you just so called it out, just buying them gifts and doing everything for them and then resenting them for it. That shit's deep as fuck. And every time we have a fight, I mean, I've moved out of, it's, I own the house. I've moved out of my own house just to get away from him twice, just over fights, right? And it just kills him.
And what's interesting is I guarantee you so much of his stuff is being triggered by yours because you are the more powerful, dominant one in the relationship.
Right.
And the other thing that I used to, that I struggled with too, is that emasculating of your partner, it doesn't work. And the only thing that repairs it is kindness and love. And when you come from a place of kindness and love, even though it feels like you're acting for a
yes.
while, and then all of a sudden it becomes your nature. Because that's really what you want.
Right.
And you know this, but because you've seen and experienced the meanness, it's what takes over when you're not paying attention.
Yeah, you could not be more right. It makes me hate myself, though. It make, you know, not though, but like, it makes me be like, oh, that sucks. Oh, I figured I was a fraud. That's probably why I was closing my eyes. And now I know I'm a fraud.
No, you're not. You're just not good at it in relationship.
Yeah.
You've never had somebody stick around long enough for you to care to fix this. You're not a fraud at all. In fact, I think the authentic you is the one that's in the yoga room.
Yeah, it feels it. I mean, it feels it. It does feel it.
100%. And the reason why is because you're super intentional about everything that comes out of your mouth and how you behave, because you're intentional about creating an experience for yourself and for the people that show up. You can do the exact same thing in your marriage. That skill that you practice every single day as a yogi, that is the exact same skill that you can bring into your relationship.
Yeah.
But so the insight for you that I think will change everything about your business and everything about this relationship is understanding that you are a mean, cold person.
Totally.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Albie's gonna be like, what the fuck, dude? You know, and even I'm such a good friend because I have shown them nothing but like a generous in every way friend, and they have mirrored that back. I have amazing friends, right? Of course I try in my friendships, you know, and it's like, I have to do that with like the loving part, and I actually see my parents' bedroom and I'm not making an excuse, but I just, my parents have never even touched each other, you know, so.
So fucking what?
I know.
You have to stop using that as an excuse. Like, now comes the, like, let's go. You are so goddamn transformed that it's no longer okay to use this shit as an excuse. You of all people know how to create something from nothing. You of all people know what happens when you act with intentionality and gratitude. If you truly want love, if you truly want this to work, that has to go to the past. You're in the right here, right now. What do you want it to look like? And I think you want the love and the kindness, and it's going to feel weird for the first 3 to 4 months to act this way. And the meanness is going to come back, and that's okay. Don't despair, but push it to the side and pull the love back up.
Awesome.
Because I really do believe this has less to do with men than you think. What is the next chapter for you?
All the things I hear, all the things people reflect at me about my teaching, authentic, genuine, I guess would be the same way, inspirational, but those sort of things are like my big part. I mean, what I want to be with Albie, now that you're saying this in such a real, honest way, I've heard it in a few ways, like, I'm so alpha, or I'm so masculine, or, you know, and I just, and everyone that tells me that is a dude, and I want to tell them to fuck off, you mm-hmm. know? But you, the way you're saying it is hits harder. Oh, I know for an actual fact my mother's mean. And how wouldn't I absorb that? And I actually am that way. And that is true. And so my new way would just be, of all the bazillion books I've read, so reread them again with this new insight. And so to act in loving kindness and to act generously in that, the most intimate relationship, which is I can even just picturing, like, telling my puppy to move over there so I could scratch Albie's back makes me almost want to roll my eyes.
Why?
'Cause I'm mean. Why do I do that? Why do I do
it
that?
It doesn't matter why
exactly.
The fuck you do it.
Exactly.
You have to change it.
Exactly. I was going to say, that my first part is just like, why am I like this? Why am I like this? I've read every book. I've done everything. It's like, okay, I got it. I got why. Just put the dog aside and rub his back. He's not ready to go to bed. I know you're ready to go to bed. Sit down with him on the couch and read on the couch until you're both ready to go to bed. Just come on.
It comes down to how much you want it.
Right.
I think that's why I asked you if you really love him. And if the answer is yes, then you could turn this around in a week.
No, that's
who's
awesome.
Not leaving.
Yes. And cares about him.
Yeah. See, every time you're mean, it tells him you're not coming back. Like, there's the threat of you always leaving.
And what do you think that does to him? This makes him on edge, makes him anxious, makes him act a fool.
Scared?
Yeah.
Withhold from you? Be resentful of you? Not be intimate? I mean, a million things.
That's really good.
Another thing that's really hard to do, you're going to hate this.
I bet.
Hate it.
Is it sweet and shit?
No, it's more like a mind trick that's very hard for somebody like you and me to do.
All right, what is it?
Assume good intent.
Give me an example.
It's very easy to jump to conclusions that somebody's doing something to be a jerk, or that he's taking too long because he's a dick, or he's didn't walk the dogs because XYZ. So, like, if walking the dogs, and you mentioned that you would come in and you would say to him, did you walk the dogs? Kind of in this accusatory, non-trusting way. If instead you walk in the door and the answer is no, I didn't, you assume good intent. Oh, well, maybe he was so wrapped up in work that he innocently forgot. Oh, well, maybe he walked them at lunch. Oh, maybe they were sleeping all afternoon and he didn't actually want to wake them up. So instead of assuming the mean thing, which is you're a lazy jerk, always try to assume good intent. very difficult to do.
Yeah, it's going to take some time. That's going to have to be a habit.
Well, here's the other thing about it. The behaviors that you and I exhibit aren't getting you what you want.
Exactly.
So meanness doesn't get him to remember to walk the dogs.
It starts a fight.
Correct.
And then I think he's so sensitive and so annoying. Yeah. No,
and then it's a power struggle.
Yes.
And then he doesn't walk the dogs on purpose because he doesn't want to be bossed around. And he's like, it creates all this stupid stuff. And so these are just little brain adjustments and attitude adjustments that start to beat the meanness out of you. And you'll start to catch yourself and be like, oh my God, there I go again. Like I asked him to do XYZ. He didn't. I'm already assuming he's a loser. What if I assumed good intent? He just forgot he was busy. He didn't mean to do it personally.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I'm thinking, my mind's going in 100 examples.
Give me one.
There was his shoes, his sneakers were outside the door this today, and there was what appeared to be dog shit scraped on the edge of the steps. And I own a two family, so I have a tenant that walks in and out of there. And I was like, I just have to ask if that's dog shit that you scraped on the steps outside and then put the shoes next to it. And he just stared at me for like the 3 seconds where you know that that was the wrong thing to say, you know, and he was like, no. I'm like, I just asked. And he was like, I didn't rub dog shit on our front steps.
And right. Here's the thing. And the fact that you would accuse me of that.
Yeah.
Is mean and demoralizing.
That's the subtext.
Yes. And here's another subtext, and this one you're going to hate. Remember how you described what it was like when your dad pulled in?
Yeah.
That's how you make him feel. What mood are you going to be in when you walk in the door? Like, he's bracing himself. And I can say that because I know that there's times in my past where I definitely either made my kids feel that way or I made Chris feel that way.
That sucks.
You think it's true?
Yeah, because I think he's actually said that before. Because we're in therapy, you know, and so I obviously got us into therapy for him. Wink, 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 wink. You know what I mean?
Of course.
You know? Which he calls me out on every day because he's not stupid, right? And last night was a terrible therapy session. I mean, he really has been like, you're mean. I mean, everything you're saying, the reason it's hitting this nerve is because I've heard it from him. And because I have a million friends, I teach 200 yoga people yoga a week. No, I'm not. You should read the emails coming in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a brand new experience for me starting at 40 to be in an intimate relationship. And it is where all my growth has to be, right? Because I've had 40 years of growing in the other ways of the self and the friend and the parents and the forgiveness. And then you put me in this new relationship, which is, I don't know why it's so triggering. It must be so close. It's like so different.
Well, you had no model.
But I had no model, but the rules are different than a friendship.
No, they're not.
It feels it.
Only because you're not following the rules of the friendship.
That's a good point.
The best love affairs are ones where you're friends who have incredible sex. That's all that a relationship that really works is.
Right. That's what I want, but I'm not doing that. I'm doing that in making him a cup of coffee, making his lunch, all that stuff. I absolutely do, right? It's the softness part that I'm not great at.
See, to me, softness is nothing more than being present to love. And being present to joy. And being present to connection.
Home when it feels threatening. It feels scary to do that. Like, I feel like my mother gave, you know, like, and be left void and trapped and with nothing.
The irony is the strategy that you're using in order to avoid feeling trapped is making you trapped. And I get that you're afraid. That's normal, but letting it dictate and allow you to justify being mean, that's a choice. You know, I think that you should come up with a new ritual that when you pull in your driveway, you take a deep breath, like whatever you do to prepare to like get in the headspace of being a yogi, and leading a class or going and getting on your own mat, you need to come up with something that you do before you walk in that house. That is all about getting present to love and to joy and to intimacy and maybe acknowledging that it terrifies you, but leaving that terror and that meanness out of the house. Because what I want for you is when Albie hears your car pull in, he's like, awesome, she's home.
This is even sadder because he knows I have so many bags with me and he knows how much I love the dogs. He greets me in the yard to take up all my stuff and so the dogs can jump all over me. And when I feel really embarrassed about saying this, when he comes home, the dogs are staring at the door with their tails wagging, so I let them out and then come back upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he just comes upstairs. I'm like already back at my computer, and I'm like, hey, babe. You know, and I might even have dinner ready, right? So I think that that's a check, right? Like I have the duty done, right? I make the lunch, I buy the groceries, I get the thing, I get the dinner ready.
Which is great if it's an expression of love, but there's a piece that you don't do that's really the scary part.
Yes. Which would be standing in the yard, letting him greet the dogs, and then me, just like he does to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's modeling that behavior. Like, people tell you what they want. I buy Chris gifts all the time. 'Cause that's my language for expressing love. I compliment him all the time because that's my language for expressing love. Chris, you know, I finally have started saying, I really need you to compliment me more.
Of course.
But so that's not in his nature. See, I didn't realize it, but I'm trying to train him by complimenting him. He actually is the kind of guy that needs more back rubs. That's not the way in which I necessarily express myself. So I've become more affectionate. And it's only because I don't want to be mean and I don't want to create a distance. I want there to be this incredible connection. And so I work so hard to change who I'm being in the relationship because of that. Because I know that if I just kind of go on autopilot, I will behave in a way that could upend any relationship in a year.
Absolutely.
And the same is going to be true for you.
Absolutely.
And it is the most magical thing in the world when you learn that you can 100% control this stuff. Like, here's the cool thing. Because of all the work that you've done, you are so equipped to pivot on a dime and flip this thing to a point where it's unrecognizable how in love, how much joy there is. And here's the thing. This is something that Mandy, my business partner, said casually one day to me. And we were talking about a couple that we both know that was getting a divorce. And she nonchalantly said, well, of course they are. I said, well, why of course? And she said, well, the wife is all about connection and the husband is all about power. And when you have two people that are in a relationship where one person is about power and one person is about connection, the person that craves power will always dominate the hell out of the person that craves connection. When you have two people that crave power, they blow each other up. And when you can get to a point where you have two people that actually crave connection, it will really work.
I love it. I love it. I can see it. I can see we both do the power thing. Probably because he has to regain it in some way because he is a man, he's a dude, you know, right. And I bet if I can crave connection and put all my energy into that, now I'm just seeing all these really undercutty, silent ways that I'm just mean. And so I know for a fact, you know, that I'll be able, that he'll mirror the connection part.
Yeah, and when you have such a simple construct, whether it's being mean versus being loving, or am I seeking power in this interaction, or am I seeking connection? It gives you an immediate distinction to pivot your behavior.
Yes.
Do you see a couple places, like one, two, or three plays that you could switch from power to connection?
Well, the greeting.
Yep.
Dictating when we go to bed.
Yep.
Right? And waiting for them and having it be more important that we go to bed together. The dog thing.
Awesome.
That's good.
Now, in terms of business, I guarantee you the exact same struggle is happening in your business.
Yes. Credit card and all my taxes due and everything, it came to $50,000, and this is in September. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to have $5,000-$10,000 weeks.
Right.
You have to work your fucking ass off.
But did you make it happen?
Absolutely.
Well, so here's the thing. You're not playing a big enough game. So you and I suspect, I have very little drama around money because I think about money like math in one big game. And same with you. This is where you need your edge.
Yes.
So this is the area where all, like, take the edge out of your relationship, take the edge out of your past, take your edge out of how you talk to yourself, and pour that edge into business. You could have a $10,000 week every single week of the year if you wanted to.
That's such a good point, to take the edge out, because I don't want, like you said, I don't want to lose it, and it's in me.
Yes.
It's in me. It just is. That's really good. And just the way I know, just the game of it and the math of it, and not be like, I don't deserve that.
It has nothing to do with emotion. Go freaking make the numbers add up.
Totally.
Period.
Totally.
Like, this is where you
totally.
Take power
totally.
And edge goes right into the business world.
Totally.
Okay? So before you walk in your house, you're going to do your little thing where you get present for a minute and you get centered on being love and joy and connection. And then when you're about to look at the week ahead in business, you're like, where's the fucking power and meanness? Let's go. Let's make some math happen.
Totally.
Right?
I love it.
Me too.
Yeah. And just run at it.
Yeah. And you're a mean, power hungry motherfucker.
I love that.
Yes.
I
you're
love
allowed
that.
To be in business.
I love that. I love that. So that I can still take that out on someone.
Yes.
Right. Or not literally, but you know, and then just all these eye openings of what I have been doing to create Albie's response makes me just want to run home and hold him. And just say sorry, you know, and like you said, flip it on its head within a week. For me, the possibility of having an actual happy life, a happy, content, loving life where I'm in a relationship where I'm in the relationship that I look up to. That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing. And the fact that the freedom part is freedom from the victimhood of life. Just like, oh, I guess I have a mean boyfriend that just gets angry at me every couple weeks. You know, and that's not very empowering. That doesn't feel good. That makes me feel trapped. You know, and the fact that I can do this myself is empowering and freeing at the same time.
God, I fucking love her. You know, if you think that was awesome, you should hear her lead a yoga class. What's amazing about Tara is she knows exactly what she wants, and she's so transformed, and she's been able to create these amazing relationships with friends and with her students. But when it came to the one thing she wanted more than anything, she kept repeating the patterns of the past. I can relate to that. It's always the damn patterns from the past. You know, there's so many takeaways from this, but let me boil this down because this is truly, truly, truly about relationships. The one thing I want you to recognize is that all relationships are the same. Your friendships, your work relationships, your relationships with your kids, with your family, with your siblings, with your lover, we're all the same because we all want the same thing. We all want to know that we matter. And when you make people feel like they matter, you will win in any relationship. And so all three takeaways are going to help you operate in a way so that the people in your life feel as though they matter. The first takeaway is a tool that you can use to help you change behavior. In the area of your life where you're being your best self, in those relationships, that's what we're going to use to help you change how you're behaving in the cruddy relationships. So Tara was her best self with her friends and when she was a yogi. So all she needs to do to change her relationship with Albie is adopt that best self character everywhere. And remember the advice that I gave Tara. When she pulls into the driveway, she needs to take a moment and intentionally switch gears from the bitchy man-hater into the best self yogi that she is. The second tool that's going to help you really deepen your relationships, and this is a difficult one, is I want you to assume good intent. When the people in your life piss you off, when you feel frustrated, when somebody supposedly wrongs you, before you snap, before you get your edge, I want you to assume good intent. And it is especially hard to do if you're a sarcastic person or if you have a lot of evidence that the other people in your life have done you wrong, but it works. Where did Tara do this? She did this in the story with the dog's poop on the dog stoop. That's a rhyme. I wasn't even intending to rhyme for y'all there, but the dog poop. Remember that story where she was basically assuming Albie did that on purpose? What kind of a jerk does that? A bitchy man-hater. What does a yogi assume? I don't know that the universe put it there, but it certainly wasn't her boyfriend. So when you are wanting to make your relationship better, assume good intent. And I will make a confession. I have gotten a lot out of this one in my own marriage. And when I started trying to assume good intent with everything that Chris did or didn't do, I was a little startled to find how much of a bitchy man-hater was in me and how often I wasn't assuming the good intent. And finally, the third takeaway is about power versus connection. This is the only thing that you ever need to know about relationships. The only thing. You're either craving power or you're craving connection in any moment. That's it. Power versus connection. And the only relationships that are truly satisfying and that go to the distance are the ones where both people crave connection. So if you catch yourself in a conversation and you realize your edge is coming out, switch to craving connection. It will change things immediately. And I have an update. Tara's doing great. Albie's doing great. But since the taping of this coaching session, Tara's father died. And when I heard the news, I wanted to be sure that I was in the very first yoga class that she taught after his funeral. When I walked in, it was an absolutely packed class. And for the first 10 minutes, we just sat on our mats in silence and listened to Tara as she cried and as she told us stories about her father and her mother and how she had a panic attack before she delivered the eulogy. She also talked a lot about letting go and how in her father's death, she was able to let go of the anger and just take a look at his entire life in a continuum. She was able to see with clarity what it must have been like to be a little boy in the 1950s that lost his leg and became the shame and the burden to his family, and how that anger grew inside her father and turned him into the person that she knew. Now, she didn't excuse the abuse or the alcoholism, but for the first time, she could truly see his story. And what have we been talking about in all of these coaching sessions? Seeing and owning your story. As the class came to a close, Tara had something powerful to say to all of us. And so I want to bring you into that class and let you listen for yourself.
Let's just take a second and acknowledge that we really know nothing about what it's like to be somebody else. Period. And then let's just think again of the two people, whether you knew them or not, whether you liked them or not, the two people that gave us this beautiful ride called life. And let's do one own together, thinking of your two parents and calling out to them in own. Inhale.
In this final coaching session, you're going to meet Ashlyn. She struggles with issues that every one of us can relate to, self-acceptance and self-love.
I am Ashlyn. I'm from Southern Oregon. I'm 19 years old. Self-acceptance is my biggest thing because I'll have the desire to do something, but then I'll hold myself back. You know, just always that thought of never being enough. And it's paralyzing sometimes just to sit there and be like, I want to do this simple thing, but like there's this thought in my head that's just tearing me back.
Now I need to warn you, in this coaching session, Ashlyn and I cover some very serious topics like suicide, self-harm, underage sex, and drugs. But this isn't a dark conversation. In fact, you're about to listen as somebody discovers their power and experiences a rebirth.
I was doing my hair, and I was trying to make a perfect ponytail, and I couldn't, so I, like, ripped my hair out. I developed a problem with hurting myself.
What else have you done to hurt yourself?
To cut myself when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I got into, like, alcohol and then drugs. Cocaine, ecstasy, anything I can get my hands on. Marijuana, LSD, shrooms. I hated feeling.
And when did the cutting start?
When I was 14. It helped me feel something.
Mm-hmm.
It was a release. Yeah.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Aisha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name is Lisa. I'm from Brazil.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall.
The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit.
Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick-Ass with Mel Robbins.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
So let's go back. Tell me about your childhood. Where'd you grow up? What was it like?
So I was born in California. My parents got divorced when I was about 2 to 3 years old.
Why'd they get divorced?
I think because of the religion that they were in.
Which is?
They were both Jehovah's Witnesses at the time.
And are they still part of the church?
Or? Just my mom. My dad left afterwards.
So. Okay, so he divorced your mom and left the church.
Mm-hmm, yes.
What is a Jehovah's Witness?
They are Christians,
uh-huh.
and they believe in Christ. They just don't celebrate holidays. They don't do birthdays.
Why?
They think that it's like linked to pagan beliefs, just like Christmas and Halloween. So
did you never celebrate your birthday growing up?
I tried to.
Well, first of all, were you in the church?
I was until I was 12 years old.
And then what happened?
I decided to sneak out when I was 12 years old with a boy, and I guess you can call them the elders or the priests of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
They came to my house and like tried to talk to me and reason with me, but then they ended up like booting me out.
Really. What does that mean?
I could go out and do ministry, and that was taken like away from me, that privilege. So they like said it on the stage. And for me, saying it now, doesn't seem like a big deal. When I was 12 years old, like it was a big impact on me.
Well, let's break this down a little bit because I think it's a lot bigger than you realize.
Okay.
You're raised a Jehovah's Witness. And at the age of 12,
yeah.
you decide that you're going to break a church rule and you're going to sneak out and go hang out with a boy. And did you hook up with the boy?
Not like intimately, but we made out and stuff, but not
okay
sex.
How did they even find out?
I left the door unlocked.
Of your house?
Yeah, so they just kind of put two and two together.
Your mother did. So you get in trouble. What happens next in terms of the church?
I just stopped going.
No, I want to hear about the two people, the elders, the folks that came over that then started making this a very serious situation.
They were stern, and they were very, like, by the book, Old Testament.
What does that mean?
In the Old Testament, it was just, like, rules and stuff. Like, okay, did you do this, or did you... Okay, then that's wrong. You're done.
So, what were you feeling in your body when these two strange, older Old Testament men show up at your house and basically tell you you've crossed in a line?
I just felt like I wasn't being understood. I felt like I was being told who I was or what to do without even, like, help. Like, it was more just like, we're here to see if you did something wrong. We're not here to help you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was super angry.
I want to go back to the piece about the self-love and the birthdays. And what are the things that the church made you feel that you're still struggling with?
I can't do anything fun.
Okay. That fun is a bad thing?
Yeah.
And also the self-love, that you're not worthy of celebrating. Or that it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Can you talk more about that?
Praise, like personal praise. It makes me uncomfortable, can you tell?
Yeah.
Like there's going to be a moment where it's like going to flip. Like it's like if something's good, it's not going to stay good.
Look, for some people, being a Jehovah's Witness really works.
Mm-hmm.
For you, it really screwed up your brain. And it screwed up your worldview. And it made you feel a deep sense of shame and anxiety and uncertainty about some of the most amazing aspects of life, which is celebrating yourself and loving yourself and having fun.
That's true.
And because it was never explained to you, you talk very, very clearly about the rules and about the Old Testament and about you cross a line and about all the shit you can't do. I'm sure swearing's one of them. And all of those constraints and all of that make wrong, it put you into a psychological box that you're still trying to break out of.
Do you think I have the key to that box?
Nope.
No?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because I don't think you see the box. Like, you can't escape the trap that you're in until you actually see the trap.
That makes sense.
And maybe you're so uncomfortable with where you're at that one of the reasons why you're so busy in your mind is because it keeps you from having to stop and consider how stuck you really are. And I recognize it because I'm somebody that's suffered from anxiety for a very long time. And there's a busyness that comes with anxiety, where it's very hard to be settled. It's very hard to be present. It's very hard to be in the moment that you're in, because it's easier to just be busy, 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 distract yourself, distract yourself, distract yourself. And then you have a breakdown, and then you solve the breakdown, and then you get busy, 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 but you're not happy.
Yeah.
For some people, it might be an extremely empowering paradigm to live in. For you, it just didn't make any sense. Tell me about your relationship with your dad.
My relationship with my dad now is super awesome. Growing up, it was distant. I told him that it felt like he was taking out his anger and feelings from my mom, like, and translating them, like, onto me.
So what was it like when he left?
For a really long time, they actually lived in the same neighborhood. So we'd be able to just kind of walk back and forth whenever. And it was weird because I don't think I ever had, like, a dad. My dad feels weird when he hugs me sometimes.
Like, he feels weird or you feel weird?
Both of us, for sure.
Why do you think it's weird?
I don't think he is used to the affection at all.
From a kid?
Yeah, and no, from his family. Like, his parents, he was from Japan, he came here, his parents were Jehovah's Witnesses, and his mom was very, like, reserved, and then his dad died when he was 20-something years old, and he was a big part of why he was in the religion.
Uh-huh.
So then after that, he kind of was just like,
I'm out.
Yeah.
And then, did he remarry? Like, what happened?
Mm-hmm. He remarried, someone. she was an exotic dancer at the time.
You mean like a stripper?
She was a stripper.
Okay.
And it was very interesting.
It's amazing how you try to make everything nice.
I do. I don't want to hurt people's feelings.
But this isn't their story.
Yeah.
It's yours. How did it really feel for you to have your dad marry a woman that was a stripper? There's nothing wrong with being a stripper, but how did it feel as a kid to have that happen?
I was just like, why out of all people? Like, because he would bring home, like, a different girl every month, it seemed like.
Your dad starts dating, like, somebody that's just gotten a divorce does.
Mm-hmm.
He's bringing home a different woman every month, or so it seems. What's that like for you, the daughter that is distant and the daughter that he shows no affection to?
Maybe that, like, I wasn't good enough to fill that hole.
Well, no, but what did it feel like for you? See, to me, for the challenge with you is you're so cerebral. You're so up in your head.
Yeah.
That I need to get you back into your body.
Okay.
You're a thinker. And that's the trap. And I don't think you've ever allowed yourself to really be honest with yourself about the stuff that you felt as all of this was processing. Like, it is literally like talking to somebody who's numb. You're very smart. And you're like this close to breaking out of that box. But the amount of stuff that you endured as a kid, it's a lot.
Yeah. I feel like I definitely always try to numb myself.
You know, there's a million reasons why you might do it. Maybe all the rules just started to make you feel numb. Maybe it made you feel like your feelings didn't count, so why bother? You know, you just got really resigned as a little kid because you got shut down so much. And you got redirected so much. And even though you didn't want your dad to leave, it didn't matter because he left. And even though you didn't want him to bring home a different person, it didn't matter because he did. And even though you wanted to be closer, it didn't matter. And so you start to feel like, doesn't matter what I feel, so I'm just not fucking going to.
That sucks.
It totally. Yeah.
I see everyone being so miserable. Like, everyone's so sad all the time. And I'm just like, I want to be that light. I want to show people that it's possible to, like, be happy genuinely. Like, but I got to do that first.
Yes. Yes, and you can. But being happy genuinely means being brutally honest with yourself about the things that you're not happy about. And it's not okay that you were a kid and you felt like your feelings didn't matter. And in fact, if anything, you were punished for them. And that's what happened. And what I'm trying to tell you is that you can have a ton of bad stuff happen to you. You can do a ton of bad stuff. And you can still be authentically happy, but only if you get super clear about the things that you've never allowed yourself to feel. And you also go to work on truly resolving the unresolved things. Like, I actually think you're probably really pissed at your dad. And that's okay. You can love somebody, be very angry with them.
That's good to know.
You know, you can literally be terrified of disappointing your mom, and you can make requests about what you need from her. And see, the thing for you is you can't be authentically happy if you're numb as hell and you've got a plastic smile on your face. And so where are the areas in your life that you feel numb right now?
Breathing. Sometimes I just feel like I don't even breathe.
You probably don't.
Like I don't open up, maybe.
I think the breathing metaphor is an excellent one. It sounds like you've lived a very shallow, not meaning shallow as in not meaningful, but a very surface level existence. I'm not surprised it's hard to take a deep breath. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't feel. Don't celebrate yourself. Don't praise yourself. Don't go out with boys. Don't. You just kept it right at the surface. You can't get too deep because when you go deep, man, when you get real, you get your butt handed to you. How long have you suffered from anxiety?
Probably since I was born.
What's the first time you remember having like a really bad bout of anxiety?
I was doing my hair and I was trying to make a perfect ponytail and I couldn't. So I like ripped my hair out.
Ouch.
Yeah. And then like I kept doing that.
So did you develop like a problem with pulling your hair?
I think I developed a problem with hurting myself.
What else have you done to hurt yourself?
To cut myself when I was 14. Mm-hmm. And then, after that I got into like alcohol and mm-hmm. then, drugs too.
What kind of drugs?
Cocaine, ecstasy, anything I can get my hands on.
Like what else?
Painkillers.
What else?
Marijuana, Molly, LSD, shrooms.
Why'd you get into drugs? I know why, but why do you think
you did? I wanted to numb myself.
Uh-huh.
I hated feeling.
And when did the cutting start?
When I was 14. It helped me feel something.
Mm-hmm.
It was a release.
That's the most common thing that people say about cutting. That when you're suffering from depression, when you feel extraordinarily numb, when you start to feel suicidal, that the cutting actually affirms that you're alive. Did you ever get to the point where you wanted to kill yourself?
Oh yeah.
What happened?
The first time I was sitting on my couch, I was super depressed at the time. I was homeschooled. I was 4 a.m. I was dating this guy at the time who I gave my virginity to. And like my biggest dream, especially Jehovah's Witness growing up, was like I was going to give my virginity to the person I married.
How old were you?
14.
Okay.
And he cheated on me a bunch with like a different amount of girls. And there was this one girl who would message me all the time telling me about their relationship while we're still together. And it got to the point where that night she was just like, he doesn't love you. He loves me. Like, he's a liar. He doesn't want to be with you. He's going to break up with you. And at the very end, she was like, you should just kill yourself. And she just kept saying that. And just kept saying that. And at the time, I had a bottle of pills that had the same amount that would be enough to kill me at the time. And I was just sitting there, I'm just like, I hate this, right? I cut myself like the two biggest cuts I've ever done. I still have scars to this day. which I don't like sometimes. But I remember calling my boyfriend at the time, and I told him, I was like, can you just tell her stop, right? Like, you know this is going on. She just told me to kill myself. I want to do it. Just tell her stop. And he's just like, I don't care. He's like, I'm going to go to bed. It's too late. Like, it's 4 a.m. And that ripped my heart out. I was just like, oh, like, okay, fuck it. You know, like, just going to do it. I took it. I didn't take it, actually. I held it, and I was just, like, crying, just, like, praying almost, just being like, is there anything? Is there anything that I can grab onto right now? And a picture of my sister, my little sister came to my head. And I knew in that moment I couldn't leave her with that impression of me leaving. That would be selfish. It was crazy as 3 months later I had a best friend of mine kill himself. And I was just like, oh my God, I almost did that. There's so much suffering in this world.
There's so much suffering in you.
Man, I want to figure this out so I can help others. I need to figure it out for myself first.
Yes, you do. But here's the thing that you also have to understand. You are a kid. Where were your parents?
My mom was probably in her room and my dad was somewhere else.
But where were they? This didn't happen overnight. Like, at some point, the thing that's really troubling is you're trying to process this alone, as if it's all on you. And look, your parents did their best, but it's not okay what happened. It's not okay that you get excommunicated from a church and all that anybody's making you feel is shame for embarrassing them. It's not okay that your dad pieces out and he's dating somebody new every single month and you don't feel like you have a father figure in your life. It's not okay that you're cutting yourself and nobody sees it.
That day where I did that, the next morning I actually went to go talk to my sister. I didn't talk to my family about anything.
Well, of course not. Why would you? Because you'd be told about the rules and you'd be told that your feelings don't matter and you'd be told to shut up or to do whatever.
Yeah. And that's kind of what happened. I mean,
well, of course they trained you to believe that your feelings don't matter.
Like, I feel like that's wrong with me.
Do you think it's okay for a 14-year-old who's cutting herself, who's about to take pills, who's in a relationship with somebody who's abusive, do you think it is entirely her fault, or do you think that somewhere, some adult should be paying attention? That it's not okay for a 14-year-old girl to feel that alone. It's not all on you. And there's nothing wrong with you saying that. And you can love your mother and you can love your father and you can still say, what happened to me is not okay. You were asleep at the fucking wheel. And tell me all the cries for help that you gave.
I would sleep in my bed all day long. I wouldn't get up. I wouldn't.
Number one. What's another one?
I wouldn't eat.
Number two. What's another one?
I'd cut myself.
Number three. What's another one?
I'd isolate myself. I wouldn't talk to anyone.
Number four.
I would rebel. I'd, like, you know, yell and get attention in the wrong ways.
Yep. Number five. How about the drugs? Number six. Yeah. You're obviously out every night if you're doing Molly every damn day for 30 days. Number seven. What does a 14-year-old girl have to do to get the attention of her parents?
I want to say scream until they noticed, but that's not healthy. It's ineffective.
You know, at some point, self-love also means being brave enough to admit to yourself that you were in a situation where nobody was actually paying attention. And see, the thing that I want you to understand is that until you see the role that your upbringing and that your parents played in having this behavior go on, you will not break out of the box. Because you're busy, even as a 14, 15, and 16-year-old who's cutting herself, trying to figure this out yourself. And what I'm trying to tell you is that we all need help. We all need support. And it's not just on you. And when you have the maturity to look back on your childhood and say, hey, this wasn't okay, and this wasn't okay, and if you two had been awake and you two had seen the cries for help, maybe I wouldn't have tried to kill myself. Maybe I wouldn't have anxiety. Maybe I wouldn't. It will allow you to not feel like you're so screwed up. Because I think that's what you live with. You live in this state where you're still numb and you're desperate to be happy. And yet you're still trying to just fix it on your own, fix it on your own, fix it on your own, fix it on your own. And if we can get you to really see, whoa, wait a minute. Holy cow. Part of my problem is that I was trained to think a certain way by that church. Holy cow. No wonder I'm so scared of pointing out things that are wrong. No wonder I don't know what to do because I've always been told what not to do.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to ask a couple questions. So was that the only time you tried to commit suicide or you thought about it?
No.
Okay. Tell me about the next time.
It was actually just a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just this hole I like climbed back into, or like I never came out of.
You need help.
Yeah.
You need to be, have you ever been in therapy?
Yeah.
Well, you need to be in therapy, okay. And you need to dig out all of these roots, and you need to look at all the stuff that's too painful to look at. But I want to go back 3 weeks ago when you, now did you attempt suicide?
I just literally wanted to so bad. Like, I really don't think I ever would. But ever since I was 14 when I had that one instance, it was like there was this voice in the back of my head that was always like, you're gonna do it one day. Like, one day you're gonna, it's gonna get to that point. Like, you're gonna do it. Like,
Do you think you will?
I don't know. I don't want to. I really don't. And I, when I almost did it.
So, but hold on. I wanna go back 2 to 3 weeks because number one, I gotta make sure. Do you feel like hurting yourself right now?
No.
So you're in a different space?
I would believe so. I do know I have stuff to deal with that if I don't deal with, it'll
come back. From my point of view, other than the obvious fact that you absolutely need to be in therapy and you need to be working with somebody who can help you in a methodical and supported way, go back and deal with all of the trauma from your youth. And the trauma is not only issues related to dad and issues related to mom, but also all of the shame that you feel based on the behavior that you engaged in as a way to act out. And if you can get to the point where you can really own all of the things that you did, good and bad, after you were kicked out of the church, if you can really own that with a sense of compassion, like, wow, that poor teenage Ashlyn, that poor kid, she just wanted love. She just wanted to have somebody notice. She just wanted somebody to pay attention. She just wanted to live. I mean, she just, that poor kid, that's all she was doing. She didn't know any better. Like, if you could have a level of self-compassion, then you would be able to start to get out of the box. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean you're endorsing the behavior. Mm. That's not what you're saying. But you have the maturity and the ability to understand that authentic happiness means that you can take a look objectively at what happened and realized that's what happened. You can have empathy and sympathy for your humanity in terms of how you responded to it. And then you can, with all of that, move forward from it. There are things that you have learned. There is wisdom